Well, that introduction, I'm kind of anxious to hear myself speak tonight. I'm going to be a very exciting individual. The various honor ever paid to me to that point was when Dr. Rice called me and asked if I'd serve on the cooperating board of the Sword of the Lord. It was through the sword that the Lord spoke to my heart. I was a mail carrier in Atlanta, Georgia, or Decatur, Georgia. She had City Route 41, a lady on my mail route subscribed to the paper, moved and failed to guarantee postage, and I kept that particular copy of the sword, read it. And it was an advertisement about a sword conference to be held in Atlanta, Georgia, and I attended it out of curiosity. It was there I caught my vision and burden to win souls and build a church. So I owe any success that I've enjoyed to the sword of the Lord. And you can imagine how thrilled I was when Dr. Rice called and then asked if I'd be on the cooperating board. Now imagine my name being in the front page of the sword, listed among the cooperating board with such men as Dr. Jack Howells and Dr. Lee Robertson and many, many others, Dr. Bob Gray. And I thought, what an honor, what an honor. And I thought that's as far as this country boy should ever go. And then sometime later, he called and asked if I'd be serve on the board of directors, the voting board. And I said, oh, my goodness. And I was honored again. And then when he had his heart attack and asked if I'd move to Murfreesboro to consider taking over the paper if the Lord called him home, I cannot tell you the heavy weight that I felt on me and the burden I felt, because I had such a love for the sword and its ministries. I'm thrilled at what God's done through this paper through these 50 years now. It's amazing. I tell the stories, and people don't even believe the stories. I tell of lives that have been changed through the sword. People don't even believe the stories. That it's impossible to believe. I thought my story was unique until I learned that Dr. Howells himself found the sword in his classroom in the Southern Baptist College when he was a student there. Dr. Bob Gray went to the Coral Falls, the sword conference, and later went back to Florida to build the largest church in the state of Florida. And the stories go on and on and on and on. They're unbelievable. Dr. Rice's influence and ministry will be felt as long as the world stands, till Jesus comes. In his lifetime, he wrote 50 hardback books, not counting the pamphlets, the tracts, and so on. Just this morning, I read our salvation report for the month of January and noticed that 25 people had written our office during January to say they were saved. As in Dr. Rice's little tract on what must I do to be saved, this thing had been printed in the millions of copies and circulated around the world. I remember the first conference I attended, I noticed all the books on the table, and I kept seeing Dr. John R. Rice's name on those books, and I kept seeing his name on more books, and I thought, this fellow has written more books than I've ever read. This is unbelievable. And I was so impressed with it. And his ministry lives on. People are still being blessed. I think Mrs. Rice still gets letters addressed to Dr. Rice, even now, folks who think he's still on earth. I thought they're still living. He is still living. He's much alive, but still on earth, and they still write about him. And then when I met the Rice family, what an honor that was. And to have joy tonight, say I'm considered a part of the family, that's another tremendous honor and joy. And I hope they got that recorded. I'll take that home. And I'm delighted to be identified with the Rice family, one of the greatest Christian families I know anything about. Mrs. John R. Rice, you'll meet her later and hear her speak. One of the greatest Christian ladies I've ever met in my life. I mean, just a sweet Christian lady, Christ-like spirit. I've never seen without a smile, and it's unbelievable. I don't know if she's how old she is or not, but at her age, still traveling all over the country, speaking week after week, it's unbelievable. And she told me one day, the Lord wakes me at 2 o'clock every morning to pray for you. And I thought, well, that's bad that you have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, but it's really good for me to get your prayers at 2 in the morning. And she told me yesterday, she said, the Lord kept me awake the last 2 nights praying for you and thinking about you. Well, the Lord knows I need a lot of prayer, and he's got a good prayer warrior on my side. And then the Rice sisters, all married to preachers, all in full-time Christian service. And you're in a very special group when you're around the Rice sisters, and I hope you'll learn all you can from them this week. Now, I must confess that I found it much easier speaking to 5,000 preachers than I do 1,000 ladies. I'll tell you why. Because when you address preachers, you're one of them. And they don't feel like you're picking on them because you're coming from where they live. When you address ladies, if you say much to them, they think, well, you're a man. And that's a man's point of view. And you feel like I'm preaching down to you. At least sometimes they have a tendency to feel that. I don't want that to happen, but I want to be a blessing to you and a help to you. I'm not against ladies, and when I preach, some ladies think I'm against ladies. I married a woman, to be honest with you. And 3 of my children are ladies, and my grandmother was a woman, and I'm half woman. My mother was a woman, my daddy was a man. That makes me half and half, I guess. I heard Dr. Rice say that. I guess it's acceptable. whoever's working the PA, don't turn me down now. Leave it sensitive, if you will. I'm going to give you something very practical tonight. I hope you'll jot it down. I promise you, if you practice what I give you tonight, you'll have a happy marriage. And I suppose everybody there wants a happy marriage. I heard of a couple that got married, and somebody said, was it a happy marriage? Happy wedding. And the man said, I've never seen an unhappy marriage. He said, all marriages are happy. He said, it's the living together that's tough. And he's right about that. I've never seen an unhappy marriage. They're all happy, but 5 weeks go by, 5 months go by, a year go by, and then things start happening, and it's not as quite as happy as they thought it might have been earlier. These are very practical things. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said, life is not divided into the secular and sacred. All ground is holy ground, and every bush is a burning bush. And I have to give practical things that you can practice, take home with you, and practice when you get home. The home is the very basis of our civilization. It is God's greatest institution. It's greater than the church and greater than the state or government. It's the greatest institution because it's God's first institution. And as goes the home, so goes the church. And as goes the church, so goes the nation. But it all goes back to the Christian home. The devil knows the importance of good Christian homes. That's why you see such an attack upon the Christian home or all homes today in our society. A man in Washington, D.C. was talking to a friend and pointed to the Capitol and said, that is the heart of America. Someone overheard the statement and said, I beg to differ with you. He said, that is not the heart of America. He said, the heart of America is the Christian homes where the Bible is read and where prayers are said. And he's absolutely right. The heart of America, the heart of the whole world, is good Christian homes where the Bible is read and where prayers are said. So there's an attack upon marriage today. And many people now who get into marriage enter with the idea, well, if I don't like it, if it doesn't work out, I can always get a divorce. Misunderstanding marriage from the very start, which is a poor way to end a marriage, by the way. I just read an article the other day from the Republic magazine on the Republic Airlines in the February 1984 edition. Had Dagwood and Blondie's picture on the front of it. You girls may have seen it flying around the country. And it just said how to have a happy marriage. And it interviewed 7 or 8 different couples. I didn't agree with about 99% of what the couple said. But I did write down some of the statistics. It said 1/2 of all American marriages now end in divorce. That startled because I read another older book just this afternoon. And at that time, only 1/3 of all American marriages were ending in divorce. Today, when two couples go to the altar, get married, you mark it down, one of the two will not make it. They'll get a divorce. Now, that's almost unbelievable, but it's happening over and over because people enter marriage with the idea that if it doesn't work, I can always get out of it. And they forget the vow they make, till death do us part. And you got to stick with it, good or bad. So you may as well try to make it good. And when I bend my ear to say amen, if you will, I need your help a little bit, all right? Oh, thank you very much. We'll get along good here. I also read that infidelity occurs in 1/3 of all marriages that it lasts at least 10 years. That means 1 out of every 3 couples has an unfaithful partner after 10 years of marriage. I also read in another old book that 75% of all married couples testify that they had more happiness in the anticipation of marriage than they have found in the realization of it. Now, you laugh about that because you remember your courting days and when your husband proposed to you and how happy you were in the anticipation of marriage. You dreamed of the house that you'd live in and how many children you would have and the size of your bedroom and the color of the bathroom fixtures. And you dreamed of the style silver you wanted and the pattern and the kind of china you wanted. And you've decorated that house 1,000 times and more before you ever got it. And some of you hadn't got it yet, and you're still decorating it. My wife and I started off in a little house with our house notes $35 a month. We've now got them down to $485 a month. And it gets worse and worse every year we live. But happy marriages are not accidental. Nothing good happens accidental. Somebody said the door to success swings on the hinges of opposition, and they're absolutely right. Moving parts always create friction. And 2 people cannot live together without having differences. But you can have a happy marriage, I'll guarantee that, if you'll jot down some very practical things that I'll give you tonight, and you'll go home and put them into practice. I gave a little sermon not too long ago to some ladies in Austin, Texas, and they said to me afterwards, why don't you get all the men together and preach to them? And I said, well, you understand, I didn't have the men here today. I only had the ladies, so I got to tell you what you're supposed to do. When I get the men together, I'll tell them what they're supposed to do. But I really believe the Bible works. I mean, every principle in the Bible works. You'll not find God wrong in anything. What he says works if you only put it into practice. The bad thing, is a difficult thing, is getting people to practice what God tells them to do. I also believe I can take any member of any family, whether it be the man or the woman, and get them to promise to do what the Bible says they're supposed to do as either wife or husband. And if either party will live up to what the Bible tells them to do as a husband or wife, they can correct a marriage that's nearly on the rocks. And they can make a happy marriage out of an unhappy marriage. You won't do it overnight, but if you do exactly what you're supposed to do, you can have a happy marriage. Now, I give you these things tonight. They're so practical, I hesitate to give them, but I want you to have them because they're important for you. It's not something I shared with my daughters before they're married, and now I share them with you, and you've already been married some of you a long time, and some of you are not married, and some of you are looking forward to getting married. I heard of one lady who was about 28 years old and unmarried, went to see her pastor. And she said, Pastor, I want you to pray that I can get married. She said, I'm 27, 28 years old, and I need to be married. I don't need to wait any longer. He said, now, God has a perfect plan. He has a woman for every man and a man for every woman, and you can't improve on God's plan. She said, I don't want to improve on it. I just want to get in on it. So if you're not married yet, maybe you'll get in on God's wonderful plan. At least I hope you will. Before I give you these things, I know some of you are not going to practice them, but I hope somebody will. And if you do, it'll work. The burden of proof lies with you. Don't be like the lady who said, I didn't have potatoes, so I substituted rice. I didn't have paprika, so I used another spice. I didn't have tomato sauce, I used tomato paste. Not a half a can, a whole can. I don't believe in waste. A friend gave me a recipe. She said, you couldn't beat it. There must be something wrong with me. I couldn't even eat it. Well, because she didn't do anything her friend said. Now, I hope you'll do what you're told to do in this jubilee here. Having said all that, I'll give you just maybe 13 practical things. Number one, be as considerate of each other as you are of others. Isn't it strange how the man is so considerate of the wife before he marries? And after 5, 10 years, suddenly that consideration has disappeared, and he's now more considerate of other people than he is his own wife. I'll give you an illustration. Mr. and Mrs. Brown goes over to Mr. and Mrs. Jones to have dinner. We call it supper where I came from. By the way, it is really supper. Supper is the meal you have at night. Dinner is the one you have in the middle of the day. Breakfast is what you have in the morning. And lunch is something you put in a paper sack and carry to school with you. But Mr. and Mrs. Brown goes to Mr. and Mrs. Jones's to have supper or dinner, whatever the case may be. And Mrs. Jones is busily waiting on everybody and accidentally spills a little hot gravy on Mr. Brown's pant leg. And he very calmly says, don't worry about it. It doesn't burn. I have tough skin. And I know just the thing to get the gravy and grease out of my pants leg. You need not worry about it, Mrs. Jones. This is very good. Don't worry about it. And he puts Mrs. Jones at ease and makes her feel comfortable, almost glad she spilled the gravy on his leg. But the week later, they're at home having dinner together. Only the Browns now, just Mr. and Mrs. Brown. And Mrs. Brown happens to accidentally spill gravy on the old grouch's leg. And he comes completely unglued. Am I right or wrong? Come on. And he goes to screaming as loud as he can scream, you clumsy idiot, you're trying to scald my leg. The only leg that I can walk on. I have rheumatism in the other, and you scalded that one. You run the best pair of pants I've had. Anybody can do better than that. As big as this room is, you stumble over my foot. As big as this room is, and spill gravy on my leg. And now, the truth of the matter is, he should have talked to his wife like he talked to Ms. Jones last week. Talk to me now. And if you want to talk that way, you should have talked to Ms. Jones that way last week instead of Ms. Brown when he got home. Now, you're laughing because I'm talking about the old man, you see. But I'm afraid sometimes you're more considerate of the neighbor than you are your own husband. So after you get married, be as considerate of each other after you marry as you are before you get married. I remember going to see my wife before we got married. I thought she was the sweetest thing in the world. Still is. And I go to see her. I couldn't wait to see her. Sometimes her mother would say, she's not ready yet. And I'd say, that's all right. I don't mind waiting on her. And then I said to my mother-in-law, I enjoy talking to you anyway. Of course, I was lying about it. And when she came out, you know, I was so glad to see her. And we went out together, opened the door, opened the car door. She got in, went on the other side and closed the car door. I said, where would you like to go? And she said, anywhere, just so I'm with you. And I said, no. And I said, let's go to McDonald's and get some hamburgers with no onions on them. Isn't it strange? As we get married, been married about 15 years, five, six kids later, that consideration's gone. And so they open the door for the lady on Sunday morning. Are you ready to go to church? The man goes out, gets in the automobile, starts the engine, starts rooting it up, blowing the horn, honk, 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 honk. And the poor lady's inside trying to get five kids ready to go to Sunday school. And time she gets one dressed, he falls into something, gets something all over, and starts all over again. And then one starts yelling, where's my shoes? And you say, I don't know, I don't wear your shoes. You don't want it warm. You say, where'd you put them? I don't know. And suddenly you realize he left them on the back porch, and now the dogs got them and hauled them off three blocks down the street. And you're trying to get those five kids ready. He's outside blowing the horn, honk, honk, hurry up. And he yells out to one, tell your mother to hurry up. She's the slowest woman God ever let live. She keeps on making us late. I'm going to quit going to that church. Yeah, now I'm getting some amen. I thought I'd get you in a minute. And after a while, here comes a wife and five kids through the screen door. I mean, they didn't open it. They went right through the screen. And one baby's diaper's down about his knees already. Overloaded. Needs a change already. And the husband's mad you kept him waiting 12 minutes. And he starts backing out of the drive before you get in the automobile. And it's every man for himself. He suddenly didn't open the door and let you in. He started backing out. And you just grabbed on and hoped you got in. Drug your leg down the sidewalk. Ruined your new hose. And off to Sunday school you were going, singing, oh, I love Jesus. But I wonder if maybe the wife's not sometimes inconsiderate as she gets married. Oh, I thought she'd grown a little bit. Yeah. Such is my wife, Lynch, sweet lady. But now if I used to, I said, where you want to go? She said, anywhere, just so I'm with you. Now then, she said, let's go so-and-so. Well, I said, I don't eat over there. I don't like eating that. She said, let's go there. Last time we went where you wanted to go. My time now. I said, you came a long way, baby. In the wrong direction. You're laughing, and you should laugh, but really, that's the rule in marriage. Be as considerate of each other as you are of others. You should be no more considerate of any man on the face of God's earth than you are to your own husband. I'm going to say something, I'll never finish this. Number two, give attention to small things. You've heard this old adage, it's the little things that count. There's a lot of truth in that. You see, people don't remember you for doing what you're supposed to do. They remember you for the little things that what I call is going the second mile. My wife doesn't really show a lot of appreciation when I pay a $480-something house note. She doesn't show a lot of appreciation for that. Neither does she show a lot of appreciation when I give her $100 a week to buy groceries. She don't show a lot of appreciation for that. Or if I pay the electrical bill $200-something, she don't pay show a lot of appreciation for that. But I could do the dumbest little old thing. Didn't cost me hardly anything. I could bring home one flower with one stem on it and a few little leaves hanging out and a little old bitty vase and meet her on the hand it and she'd because she didn't expect me to do that. A chaplain who noticed in the army several men who were very, very happy with their marriage and he was curious and so he called together the men in his company that seemed to be the happiest with their wives and happiest with their marriages, and he interviewed them. And he said, what is it that you miss most about your wife? He thought they'd say, well, I miss the clean house she kept, and I miss the good meals she cooked, and I miss her sewing the buttons on my shirt or something. But to his surprise, he heard such things as, I miss her scratching my back at night. I miss her shampooing my head every Saturday night. You know, little things you do. I need not go into any further detail about that, but the point I'm making is they missed. I will if you want me to. It's the little things that count. It's when I come home and sit in the chair and my wife sneaks up behind me and I'm sitting there in the chair and I'm tired and she reaches over and kisses me on the bald spot in the back of my head. It's when she reaches down and starts rubbing my shoulders. Or reach around and kiss me on the cheek. Oh, yeah, we've married 18 and 49. I've been married 31 years. And I still enjoy being kissed on the cheek. We're kind of quiet in here tonight. You're awful quiet. Every wife ought to kiss her husband, and she ought to brush her teeth so she doesn't. I said to them one time, I said, kiss your wife. I mean, several times a day. Hug and kiss your wife. Several times a day. And I said, shave who you kiss her. She don't want to feel like she's been drugged through a briar patch every time she gets a kiss. And after the service, the lady came up with a handsome husband who had a big, thick, beautiful beard. And she was grinning. And she said, nobody minds going through a briar patch for a good picnic. I said, have it your way, sister. Have it your way. You've got to every night. Give attention to small things. Now, don't look at your neighbor's notepad. Please don't look at your neighbor's notepad. Don't look. It's not fair. But under that, I wish you'd write down two or three things that you know he really enjoys. Little things. Don't cost anything much. Now, if somebody's nosy, just write down something ridiculous and scare them to death. But write down three things that he really likes. I mean, little things. I'm not talking about clean house, which is standard. Get to that in a little bit. I'm talking about little things that you know he likes, and do it. Give attention to little things. Number three, don't make comparisons. Don't have any humor about this. I think one of the greatest causes of misery and uncomfort and unhappiness in a marriage is either the husband or wife making comparisons. But they start mentally. You're in a church and you look around the church when you see somebody else's husband. And you start looking at him and your husband. And you think, I wish my husband would do like so-and-so's husband. You should never do that. You should never go that far. If you ever start, I mean, just throw it out of your mind. Stop. Don't make a mental comparison. That eventually leads to a verbal expression of that comparison. And that leads to worse trouble. You should never make a verbal comparison. No wife should ever say, why don't you do like Bill does for Mary? You know, it'll be like the fellow was and moved in next door to the couple. And they're a very loving couple. And this man and his wife saw them hugging and kissing on the front porch all the time. It was summertime. And finally, his wife stood here and said, listen, that's that new neighbor over there. Said, look what they're doing. Said, he is hugging and kissing her all the time. Said, why don't you ever do that? He said, honey, I don't even know that woman. Don't make comparisons. I mean, don't say, if my husband only had the hair that so-and-so has. Or my husband would only be as neat as Mr. So-and-so. Don't ever even say it in your mind. It leads to misery. Never. It's just a law. You cannot make comparisons. You're headed down the road for trouble. Never make it. Man should not make comparisons. Say, I wish my wife was like so-and-so's wife. Never say that. One of the devil's tricks is to bring unhappiness in the marriage is to get couples to make comparisons. Try to avoid feelings of comparison, even if they never surface. Never ask, why isn't my wife or husband like that? We usually think that the man that we see down the road is a lot better off or a lot better husband than what we think he really is. If you knew the facts about the guy that you're making comparisons about, you'd think God's the one you have. The greener grass on the other side usually turns out to be artificial turf. Witness the marriage and remarriage and marriage and remarriage and marriage and remarriage. That ideal couple, fellow never comes along. Number four, turn misunderstandings into opportunities for better understanding. I have a little saying, problems are opportunities for improvement. I like problems. The fellow never has any problems, never has a chance to improve anything. I think happy marriages are nothing more than spotting problems in the marriage and correcting the problems, whatever the problems are. And there's a problem with your cooking. I don't know. I kind of feel sorry for the next generation coming along because mothers are not teaching kids to cook anymore. I heard of one lady who got mad and fixed something and set it down before her husband. He looked at it, he didn't know what it was. And she smiled and proudly said, Mother taught me to cook two things very well, beef stew and lemon pie. He said, which one is this? If you have a problem or a misunderstanding, turn it into a better understanding. A better understanding. We're going to have misunderstandings. I've heard couples say they've been married 40 years and had a misunderstanding. I really find that hard to believe. I mean, just impossible to believe. It may be. And if you tell me that, I'll say, okay, I'll give you, I'll believe you. But I'll say, oh, well. Somebody said, you and your wife ever have crosswords? I said, we never have crosswords. Our words fly so fast, they don't have time to get crosswords. But the last time we had a fight, she came to me on her hands and knees, bless her heart. And said, come out from that bed, you little rascal. And when I did come out, we had a fight, and I didn't see her for 3 weeks. Then my left eye began to open up just a little bit. Number five, learn to make adjustments. You're going to have to do some adjusting. No two people are going to be exactly alike. God did not produce humanity with a cookie cutter. And I've often said to people all this countryside, you are an original, you're not a copy. There's never been one before you exactly like you, and when you're dead and gone, there'll never be another one exactly like you. And there are no two people anywhere in the world exactly alike. You can't marry anybody that'll be everything you want them to be, so you've got to learn to make some adjustments. One may enjoy reading in bed. How many enjoy reading in bed? Raise your hand. I thought so. How many don't enjoy reading in bed? Raise your hand. Don't you see that? You ladies don't even agree with each other. How many of your husband read in bed would irritate you at night? Now, be honest. I mean, just kept on reading, you want to go to sleep. Raise your hand. Well, thank God for the honest ladies. Yeah. Don't you see, one enjoys reading in bed, one doesn't enjoy reading in bed. My wife always reads in bed. Every night, she got to read something before she goes, dude, I got to read till I get sleepy. I say, why don't you start at 5:00 p.m? I got to get up 5:30 in the morning and go to the office. What do you mean you got to read till you get sleepy? I'll be honest, I don't just get in there and say, honey, now you just enjoy reading all you want, and I'll lay here my eyes wide open. They'll look like road maps in the morning, but you'll enjoy your reading tonight. You got to learn to make adjustments. One may stay up late. I shouldn't ask you this, but does anybody here enjoy staying up late? Well, sure, look at you. Dr. Bob Jones Sr. said you ought to do two things every day that you don't want to do to build character. And I quickly said, I do two things every day I don't want to do. I go to bed at night, don't ever want to go to bed. And I get up in the morning, don't ever want to get up in the morning. I'm honest. Yeah. How many like to go to bed early? Raise your hand. See that? You're different. If you're married to a husband who likes to go to bed early and you like to go to bed late, somebody's got to make some adjustments. Learn to make adjustments. I've told this story. I hesitate to tell it because my wife corrected it. She heard me tell this and corrected this. And it made me mad because now I can't tell the story with a good, clear conscience. When we first married, my wife, I'm a perfectionist. I don't mean I'm perfect. I mean, you know what a perfectionist is. I want everything right in place. If you set 6 Coca-Cola bottles down, you turn all of them facing the same way. You look at a perfectionist's money in his pocket, you won't find one bill with the back showing and the front showing. The front will be showing all the bills with the faces turned the same way and all the corners. You won't find any bent corners on any money. Right? Do we have anybody like that in here? You want everything just in place, perfectionist. Do we have other folks that kind of stuff makes you nervous? Raise your hand. I thought so. Well, I want everything just right. My wife's not quite the perfect. She's a very clean housekeeper. Somebody said you eat off her floors. I often do, but anyway. When we got married, I learned quickly. My wife is a kind of lady who takes the top off the toothpaste and drops it. And you never see it again. I don't know where it goes. And she never mashes a toothpaste from the bottom up. She grabs the middle of the tube and goes... gets part on the toothbrush and part on the sink. And then she throws the toothpaste back in the drawer. And then she goes brushing her hair. And loose hair falls down and it sticks to that toothpaste at the top where there's no top on it. After about 3 days, it looks like the toothpaste is growing hair. And I go and use the toothpaste and I say, yeah. So I take a washcloth and wash the top of the toothpaste off and clean all the hair away from the top and ask her where the top is. And I know she's not going to tell me where it is. And then I neatly fix it back the best I can and use it. And I say, honey, don't squeeze that in the middle. More toothpaste squeezed in the middle. We almost got a divorce over that. Because I bought my own tube of toothpaste. Easy to adjust. I bought my own tooth. And I said, this is mine, that's yours. And you use that one, I'll use this one. And when I get through, I'll roll mine on the bottom, see off the top, put the cap back on it. I don't screw it two times. I put it all the way down, not just one time. All the way as far as it'll go. It's what the ridge is on there for. Put it back in the drawer real neat. My toothbrush didn't straighten the little package and my razor blades, everything just right. Don't worry about it in that drawer. And she opens it. I can tell it's been opened. She can just look at it. Everything goes. About 3 weeks ago, I ran out of toothpaste. And I didn't even know where to look for her toothpaste. I began to open drawers and out jump curlers and all kind of weird things. And finally I found a tube of toothpaste and she had bought one of these little things that sit on the bottom of it that she twisted up with. Neatest little tube of toothpaste you've ever seen. You are just sitting up there smiling at me. Said. It looked like it was sticking its tongue out and said, but the cap on it, nothing outside. I hated to have to tell her that I'd found that. But I had to, I said, I noticed you. You've ruined my story about the toothpaste. You just ruined my story. Now look at what you've done. You fixed it all up. Now I've got to find something else wrong with her. But you need to learn to make adjustments. Number six, must hurry here, strive to be understanding. Strive to be understanding. The husband, you get married, and some of you find out you're married to a man who enjoys taking his clothes off as he walks down the hall. And he just drops the shirt wherever the last button comes open. And he takes off one shoe and just pitches out on the floor, and it may be bottom side upwards or sideways. He pulls off the sock and throws it. And by the time he gets undressed and ready for bed, there's socks in one room, shoes in one room, shirt in one room, pants hanging curled around the door somewhere. You got to be understanding. You can't say, don't you know how to hang up a pair of pants? Don't you know how to hang up a shirt? You don't have to make coffee nervous. You'll give an aspirin a headache. Man, pick your britches up. Now, you got to try to understand why he does that. There's a reason he does that. You want to know why he does that? Okay, I'll tell you why he does that. His mother taught him to do that. You see, he had a mother who picked up the cute little socks after her darling little boy. And she'd pick up his little bitty britches and hang them up so neat and on a hanger for him. And he's used to it. His mother enjoyed doing it. So he married you and your woman. He thinks you enjoy the same thing. He don't really know you don't really enjoy it. Kids learn what they're taught. And if they learn to do that, somebody taught them to do that. If a boy does that, it's because his mother does not make him go pick them up. She should say, hey, did it? Is that your pants? We say dumb things anyway to kids, don't we? Little old pair of pants about that long, little bitty legs in them. Pick your pants, Billy! No, ma'am, them are daddy's britches. Pick up a little bitty sock with a toe out. Then is this your sock? You know. No, that's the dog's sock, Mommy. If you make him pick them up every time, hang them up. He learns you're going to have to pick them up and hang them up. And he starts hanging them up without you calling him back. I used to say to my boy, I'd have to put a paper in the yard. He'd get busy. Run way down the street, two blocks, start playing. I'd see the paper still laying there. I'd go out and call him back. His precious mother said, don't do that. She said, he's enjoying playing ball. It won't hurt you to pick that paper up. I said, it won't hurt me to pick the paper up, but it'll hurt him if I pick it up. Because the next time I tell him to pick a paper up, he'll know if he doesn't do it, I will. And I'll teach him that he does not have to pick up paper when I tell him. But if he has to quit playing ball and come back, spend about 15 minutes picking up papers in the yard the next time, he'll pick up before he leaves. So I say, Tony! You know how you call your kid, right as I yell. And he acts like he doesn't hear you. He keeps looking the other way and hitting the ball, you know. Tony, you hear me, Tony! And you yell real loud, and he comes, and he peeps around. Come here to me, boy! And he comes running. You don't know what's wrong. His face is white. Scared to death. And then I asked a dumb question. Did I tell you to pick that paper up? Yes, I believe that is what you told me. Did you pick that paper up? That's another dumb question. I'm looking at the paper. Yes, I picked it up and blew out the trash can and got back in the yard. Did you pick that paper up? No, sir, I didn't pick it up. Pick it up and put it in the trash can. And he knows you got to do it. So if you have a husband who clutters the house up with his clothes and who maybe does other things that he shouldn't do, I won't go into a lot of detail. He does things he shouldn't do. Try to be understanding and figure out what makes him do those things. And the husband should be understanding with you. He's not here, and please don't go and preach my son with your husband. Please don't. You can give him the tape if you want to and let him listen to it. Don't preach it to him. Be understanding. The wife may be very slow in dressing. I'm not talking about dressing a chicken. I'm talking about dressing herself. So it takes her forever to get ready. Some ladies are slow. I know out of you ladies here, there has to be somebody here that's slow getting ready, and I don't expect you to admit it, because you don't think you're slow. You think you're thorough. In our house, I'm the slow one. My wife said, it takes you longer to comb your hair than it does me to comb my hair. I said, that's because you've got hair. I got to place all mine and paint my scalp with black shoe polish. You don't have all that to do. I said, you don't have to shave your face every morning. She said, yeah, but I got to put on lipstick and yank, 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 mascara and all that other stuff you put on. One may be very slow in dressing, while the other may be very fast. You got to be understanding and put up with it. There are some people that tend to be later where they go. I mean, they never leave 15 minutes or they wait to the very last second. And the line says, just enough to get that 2 minutes ahead of time. And the other person in the marriage always likes to get there 30 minutes early. And you're constantly fussing over, man. Why do you want to get here 30 minutes early? I'm setting the church. I'm going to get the birds. I mean, you're sitting here in the yard in the car. Well, why do you want to get to the last minute and be nervous and biting your fingernails? Ain't you going to be late? My wife said to me, she said, you'll be late for your own funeral. I said, I'm not going if somebody doesn't take me. What was I saying? Where was I? Be understanding? Was that it? No. Number five, be understanding. Was that what I was saying? Say, excuse me. You're keeping up, aren't you? Be understanding. The error is human, to forgive is divine. It builds a good relationship when you learn to forgive and overlook little things and be patient and try to be understanding. You're not going to change him. You've been trying 38 years, he's still the same. You're not going to change him. I've been married 31 years, I haven't changed my wife. She hasn't changed me. I've seen that she hasn't changed me. I'm the same way I was, she's the same way she was, so we're going to have to adjust to divorce one or the other. And it's too expensive to divorce. B.R. Lincoln said he used to call his wife, said, I call my wife every night I'm on the road. Every night I call my wife before I go to bed. A friend said, isn't that awfully expensive? He said, not as expensive as alimony. Well, I don't know about that. And it's strange, though, before we get married, we never see these faults. We never see that he's slow or she's slow. Like when my wife was late getting ready. By the way, she's the fast one in my family. I'm the slow one. Don't laugh. Don't say amen to that. I didn't mean to hear that one. But before we get married, we never see that fault. She never saw that before I got married. I never saw the things in her before I got married. After I married, suddenly I start seeing things. There may be something to that expression, love is blind. And when you really fall head over heels in love with somebody, and you just go, ah. And he says, wilt thou marry me? And you wilt. It's hard to see anything wrong with you. Mother says, but that boy so-and-so. No, mother, you just imagine that. It's not in that boy. And your daddy says, son, that girl so-and-so. I said, no, daddy, you don't see what I see. He said, son, so-and-so. I said, no, daddy, you missed it. I mean, it's not like that at all. You married a while, and your mother says, I told you so. Yeah, he says, I told you so. Number 7. I got 13. But it says 9:30 on the program when I quit. Strive.